Do the ghosts of Jesse James, Cole Younger, and Annie Chambers still haunt us? What about the apparitions of Carrie Nation and Tom Pendergast? It wouldn't be difficult. They're all buried in our area. I'm Monroe Dodd, and on today's Halloween Season Central Standard, we'll talk about the cemeteries where Kansas City's notables, famous and notorious, have been laid to rest. What lives did they live? What influence did they have on our region? And what was their fate? Do any of them do the paranormal thing on Halloween night? We'll find out coming up on Central Standard after the news. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard Friday. I'm Monroe Dodd. It's late October. The nights are growing longer and people are decorating their houses with orange lights and fake spider webs. Yep, we're less than a week away from Halloween. This is a big time for ghosts, apparitions of those who've departed this life but who are thought by some to return, particularly on the 31st of this month. And if ghosts are going to walk the earth, wouldn't they start off from the places they were laid to rest? And that brings us to cemeteries. At Halloween time, cemeteries can evoke the idea of souls departing their resting places and mingling with us, the living, as ghosts. Today, we'll talk about Kansas City cemeteries and the famous and infamous who lie there. Our guests are Bruce Matthews, who has worked tirelessly to preserve one of Kansas City's most notable cemeteries, Elmwood. Good morning and welcome, Bruce.
Good morning.
With us by telephone from his home in Colorado is John Mark Lambertson, formerly of the National Frontier Trails Museum in Independence. Mark, nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
Later in the program, we want to hear the stories you've heard about cemeteries or about maybe the apparitions you've heard that walk the earth here in our town. Does Tom Pendergast's shadow lurk at 1908 Main Street? Does Satchel Paige still go through his windup out at Forest Hill Cemetery? Back to what we do know. Bruce Matthews, you've raised money for Elmwood, watched over it carefully, and even overseen a recent book about the cemetery and the people who lie there. It's a place that represents a lot of Kansas City history, but does so through memorials and markers to folks who helped make that history. What makes any cemetery, and particularly Elmwood, so special?
Well, I think Elmwood is the most historic site in Kansas City, and I say that because you can't tell the story of Kansas City any better than recalling the lives of the people who are buried there. There are 1,500 veterans who are buried there all the way from the War of 1812 up through Vietnam. 12 former mayors of Kansas City are buried there. And people like anybody who has a street named after it virtually is buried there. Meyer, Gregory, a lot of names that we know from the past.
Some of the town's founders from the 1850s and 60s, particularly Kersey Coates and his wife, Sarah Chandler Coates, are buried there.
They're buried there as well, yeah.
And you have, there are other cemeteries. Mount Washington has Robert Van Horn, speaking of the city's founders, and Nathan Scarrett.
And William Rockhill Nelson.
And William Rockhill Nelson, right. And John Calvin McCoy is at a place called Union Cemetery. Now, you're also involved with Union Cemetery.
I'm on their advisory board and helping them put together a book, which will be out next October, similar to the Elmwood book, but about Union.
Tell us about Union and where it is and why it's called that.
Union Cemetery is just south of Crown Center, 28 acres. Their records burned over the years, but there's a lot of people buried there that they can't identify. But 28 acres, and I think there's over 50,000 people buried there. It's very large. Union, and although there are both Union and Confederate soldiers buried there, had nothing to do with being named for the war. It was named for the Union between Westport and Kansas City, and the founders at that time thought that cemetery would take care of all the needs of Kansas City for time to come, but we've grown a little bit.
And when Union Cemetery began, we had grown so little that that was in between the two towns of Westport and Kansas City, out in open spaces. Cemeteries do tend to be, at least when they're founded, on the edges of areas.
Oh, Elmwood, which is at Truman and Van Brunt, was way out in the country, And cemeteries like this were the forerunners of public parks. So they it would be a day trip to go out to the cemetery, so people would pack lunches and picnic in the cemetery. Elmwood was designed by George Kessler, who designed all the parks and boulevard system in Kansas City. He also designed the grounds of the World's Fair in St. Louis in 1904, and he designed the grounds for August Meyer's home, which was called Marburg at the time, and we now know it as Vanderslice Hall down at the Kansas City Art Institute.
Now, Kersey Coates and Sarah Chandler Coates were one of the earliest of the prominent families in Kansas City history.
Right.
He moved out here from Pennsylvania to do investments and stuff and stayed and fought for the railroad bridge and all manner of things. Well, he must have been one of the earlier persons to be buried in Elmwood.
The Elmwood opened in 1872. Mm-hmm. The oldest gravestone and oldest person buried there, though, was James Hyatt McGee. And he died in 1840. And on their family farm, he was buried, which is about right where 19th and Baltimore is today. And as the city grew, his family moved that entire cemetery over to Elmwood. Some of the McGees are also buried down at Union Cemetery as well.
Does Elmwood Cemetery, and you've spent a lot of time there working so very hard to keep it preserved, is there a point where it seems spooky to you?
No, no. I just have pleasant thoughts when I go there. We're all busy, and I like to just walk the cemetery with camera in hand and catch my breath from time to time.
You're a professional photographer.
I am.
And you took a lot of photographs for that book.
I did.
Cemeteries are serene places. They're not necessarily even sad places sometimes.
Oh, absolutely not. And we just went through an experience. We had a little deer that was born in the cemetery on Memorial Day of 2011, and little Ella, I think everybody knows Ella's story, but the thing that she made special about Elmwood was just her interaction with the people. We tried not to make her into a pet and just let her do her own thing there. We had been advised by the conservation department to not try to catch her and turn her out into the wild because she wouldn't survive. Right in the middle of the cemetery is an old chapel that goes back. It was built in honor of Kirkland Brooks Armor, who founded the Armor Meatpacking Company. And Ella, during a funeral service, she would come and stand in the open doorway and watch the whole proceedings. And then as the family would walk to the gravesite, she would tag along, and the family would send pictures back of the kids petting there during the funeral service. So she was very special.
Just to remind people who don't know, Ella was shot.
Yes.
By someone. And the someone was caught.
Yes.
Mark Lambertson, you've been to cemeteries all over Kansas City and the region, I believe, around the world. Is that so?
Yes, yeah. It's been sort of an interest and passion of mine for, about 50 years, I guess, at this point.
What themes do you find that are common around the region and around the world in the way we mark our dead?
Well, I think there's always a sense that people want to be remembered. Either they themselves or their family members want to honor them with some kind of marker. So it is pretty traditional all around the world, not in some cultures, but most cultures, to mark graves and have at least a name, if not something more than that. And it's just a way of being able to preserve the memories. And again, this varies from culture to culture, but for example, in Japan, they not only do up the markers, but they have special days in which the family members go and gather and recite prayers and do various things in honoring the deceased. We sort of do that still with Memorial Day, but it's not nearly the kind of event and holiday that it used to be quite a number of years ago.
In my brief reading about the whole nature of Halloween and things, Halloween, apparently, the notion of this time of year being an end of year and a beginning of the year and of death and rebirth and even of spirits walking the earth goes back centuries and maybe even millennia. Is that true?
Yes, that is. I'm not that well-versed on the roots of Halloween, but it certainly has played into the idea of the dead and spirits and so forth. So it becomes part of the attraction or the entertainment of including cemeteries in Halloween type of festivities.
Some cemeteries, not all, certainly, some cemeteries have chosen to allow things like paranormal tours and things like that.
Yes. Uh-huh. And there's many occasions in the Kansas City area, Union Cemetery, Woodlawn Cemetery, and Independence, where they have done guided tours of graves of notable or interesting people. And oftentimes those are based around the time of Halloween just because people sort of get into that whole element of spirits and the dead and so forth at this particular time.
You're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. I'm Monroe Dodd. Is there a famous person of Kansas City history buried in our city limits that you want to know about, or even outside the city limits? Join the conversation. You can call us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Or tweet us. Our handle is KCURST. Bruce, Elmwood has had an occasional event on Halloween. There was a run at one time, right?
Yes.
But not anymore?
Not anymore. We've kind of replaced that with our annual picnic in keeping with the theme of early cemeteries being public parks and everything. And we have it the first Friday, first Saturday of every October, and we have this last one we had about 240 people down there, and it's a good time to gather and talk about family and shared feelings and everything. But Elmwood does not endorse paranormal tours or Halloween activities. Elmwood is just kept open by volunteers and donations. There is no paid staff, and as trustees, we've just taken the position that respect for the dead and honoring those people and coming together as family and everything is just the way that we care to go. We don't believe that if one family member visiting the cemetery is upset by some activity, mm-hmm. it's just not worth it.
Well, I know that Charlie Parker is buried in Highland Cemetery, and there have been souvenir hunters there. Am I not right?
Right.
Right. So some of Kansas City's famous, perhaps one of the most famous burials is up in Kearney at Mount Olivet Cemetery there, Jesse James.
Correct.
And yeah. His marker was pretty much destroyed, his first one, wasn't it?
Yeah. His, well, interesting connection from Elmwood. His wife was, or his mother was kept in the public holding vault at Elmwood for 6 months before. No, public holding vaults were in cemeteries were primarily designed to, if somebody died during the winter and the roads were too tough to take them back to their city where they lived, they were held in the public holding vault for a while. That was particularly true back in a congressional cemetery in Washington, D.C., a beautiful old cemetery. But if a congressman would die during the middle of the winter and couldn't get back to Iowa or someplace, they were kept there until the spring thaw.
And so Jesse James's wife was kept at Elmwood for that very reason. My goodness. Mark Lambertson, the grave markers have some similarities, and especially there's a certain art and a certain, maybe science to grave markers. What have you found about grave markers in your searches?
They've come through an interesting progression, certainly in the United States, where in the early years on the East Coast, they tended to be very tall, slender monuments done in slate. And over time, they developed where those were getting to be a little bit too fragile because of the thinness of the slate and so forth. And so they began using things like granite and going with more monuments rather than just slab kind of tombstones. So there's a number of things in the way of both the kind of materials used, the style in which the gravestones are formed or fashioned, and certainly lots of variations through the years, progression of the artwork that has been used on them, a lot of symbolism and various things like that that have come into vogue and fallen out of favor as well through the years.
I've been in old cemeteries where there are poems about the deceased.
Yes.
On the gravestone.
Yes, that's also a very popular part. We don't see it nearly as much these days as was done in, say, the 19th century. But pieces of scripture or some kind of sad, sentimental piece of remembering the loved one that rests there and so forth was very much in vogue in sort of that very sentimental, romanticized era of relationships back in the 1800s.
You mentioned, Mark, the stuff of which gravestones are made. I've been on a couple of genealogical excursions myself where I go to a grave and I can't read what's on it because it has just so deteriorated.
Yes. Unfortunately, you know, as I was mentioning, those early ones tended to be done out of slate, which actually has held up surprisingly well over the years. Some of those inscriptions from the 1600s in the East Coast are still very, very crisp. It got to be more popular by about the start of the 19th century to go to white marble instead, that it was viewed as being sort of a prettier stone. Unfortunately, it is a softer stone, and those monuments in marble have really deteriorated over the years. And again, they switched, and most of the stones that you see today are done out of granite, which, again, will hold up very, very well.
Bruce Matthews, do you see this progression of materials at Elmwood and Union Cemeteries?
Yes, definitely. It's one of our bigger challenges at Elmwood. It is not a cemetery where all the stones are flat and you just mow over them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the memorials at Elmwood are quite large. The biggest one that I think of is Charles Grandison Hopkins, and his monument is 28 feet tall and weighs 56 tons. So they are architectural masterpieces. One of the other types of material that some of the, quote, stones are made of is actually a white bronze, and they will hold up for a long time as well. Look like a normal gravestone, but if you tap on it, you can hear. And some of those are quite large. We have one of them in Elmwood, but there's some big ones in a cemetery up in Atchison, Kansas that I just saw recently.
Prominent people often, their families often erect quite grand monuments. You mentioned Charles Grandis. What was his
Charles
role?
He was a entrepreneur, and he actually was a friend of Kersey Coates and talked Kersey Coates into building the Coates House Hotel there on Quality Hill.
19th century folks,
yes,
all.
Yeah. We also have a number of mausoleums where either they're carved into the hillside or they're freestanding, and sometimes whole families are buried within those mausoleums.
Now, speaking of paranormal tours, there are some cemeteries that do them. Greg from Olathe writes us in an email. We did the guided after dark walk in Olathe a few years ago. They had reenactors at several important graves, including that of Charles Heyer, H-Y-E-R, the local purveyor of the cowboy boot. Mark Lambertson, you've seen all different types of burial structures. Bruce mentioned mausoleums. What are the things that move people to have one kind of burial versus another?
Well, obviously, the number one factor is going to be their financial ability. Although some will pull out all the stops to have a really impressive monument for themselves, even if they maybe lived a life very frugally and with limited means and so forth. But sometimes it also comes down to a matter of what is in vogue at a particular time. I find it sort of interesting that soon after the discovery of King Tut's tomb in Egypt in 1922, there got to be sort of this revival of all things Egyptian, and it was reflected in furnishings and even clothing and so forth. It stretched itself all the way to cemeteries where there were, for people that could afford it, people were having small pyramids erected over graves, or even a sphinx, or other kinds of detail that sort of emulated some of the artwork of ancient Egypt.
That's fascinating. Cemetery is subject to the waves of fashion and popular culture. Interesting. We have a caller, Matt from Baldwin City. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning. How are you?
We're fine.
Well, this is probably the perfect place to deliver this story, and I just thought of this as your show was progressing here, and I have a story to tell. I have actually seen in the window of William Rockhill Nelson's mausoleum, and it is indeed impressive in there. I was in that cemetery in Independence there, just off of Truman Road.
Washington Cemetery?
I believe that may be it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And I was there looking at some restoration work on another project, and I noticed there was a, well, actually, one of the other things I noticed, let me just first say, the oddest name on a gravestone I've ever seen, which was Flemin Gloyd. And I looked up Mr. Gloyd, and indeed, he owned a department store in Kansas City at one point. But I noticed there was a broken window on the William Rockhill Nelson?
Yes.
Mausoleum, and so I kind of peeked in the window, and indeed, it is impressive in there. It looks almost like the tomb of Napoleon with a gigantic sort of block of stone in inside.
Matt, I know the answer to this, but will you remind our listeners who William Rockhill Nelson was?
Well, you've heard of the art gallery, right?
Yes.
Wasn't he like the publisher of the Kansas City Star?
Yeah, he owned the Kansas City Star and co-founded it, in fact. Well, that's very interesting. Thanks for sharing with us what you saw when you looked inside his mausoleum, Matt.
Okay.
Do people poke around the cemetery looking inside stuff at Elmwood, Bruce, very often?
Oh, they everybody likes to see what they can see of the mausoleums and everything. Elmwood, we also have a lot of photography classes that come through and students from the Kansas City Art Institute coming down and painting because some of the monuments are quite impressive. And it just the way the whole cemetery is laid out with the winding rows, it's a good place for inspiration.
It's pure George Kessler Park-like.
It is, absolutely.
Now, with George Kessler, which came first, the parks or the cemeteries, or did he do them simultaneously?
He had to have been working on the parks first, yeah.
So the curving roads you see in our boulevard system sometimes and in our
are echoed
parks.
In Elmwood, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Mount Washington, you know, some of the older cemeteries.
Mount Washington, yeah.
I don't think you could afford to, and the artisans still are not around to sculpt some of these old stones like they were. The cost would be astronomical today. That's why they've gone to flatter stones and less maintenance. You can just mow over them.
In historical cemeteries here like Elmwood and Union, Bruce, are people still being buried in those?
There are a number of grave sites still available at Union Cemetery, I mean, or at Elmwood, but there are the burials now are mostly the last surviving family member of somebody who already owned a lot. There are a number of scattered singles still available, but maybe a dozen burials each year.
So it would be possible. Is it still possible to be buried at
absolutely.
Even these historic cemeteries?
Yeah, there.
Mark Lamberton, for decades, a lot of Halloween costumery has been of Disney characters or horror movie monsters, and they mean to scare and some are to be cute. But the real thing that happens this time of year when All Souls Day happens, or the eve of All Souls Day, is that these apparitions are walking, and that might be a little bit scary. Do you get a sense of that when you visit these cemeteries, or sense that other people are getting a sense of that?
I have actually never experienced that myself. I've always been so fascinated with the artwork and the inscriptions and so forth that I always found them to be very, actually very welcoming places. Very beautiful as far as the variety of trees and shrubs and roses and so forth. So, I always found them to be very, very welcoming. Of course, it could be probably very eerie at night. I've been in some cemeteries at night, but not too often. And we basically don't really encourage people to visit cemeteries at night because too often it is a matter of individuals with sort of warped senses of humor that decide that that's a good place for creating some mischief, and it's been to the detriment of, unfortunately, thousands of cemeteries all across the country.
Yes, I understand. I'm glad you mentioned that. We have one more caller before the break. We have Steve in Lawrence. Good morning, Steve.
Well, good morning. What a great show. I'm a genealogist, so I've spent a lot of time in cemeteries around. And, in fact, I used to live right across the street from Elmwood, where my family's buried. And I just wanted to mention a couple of other interesting burials in the area. There's one map, the caller from Baldwin, Kent, especially interested. In Baldwin, there's a man named Luther Taylor, who's a professional baseball player, known as Dummy Taylor because he was deaf mute. And the story is that he's the man that baseball signals were invented for to help him on the field. The other burial is one an ex-girlfriend and I used to visit quite often. It's Frank James and his wife. And they're buried in what I presume was an old family cemetery, but it's now in Hill Park in Independence.
Frank
and
James.
I just want to pass those on and for all the cemetery aficionados in the area.
All right, Steve, thank you so much for your call. And we'll be back after the break to find out more about the resting places of Kansas City's most famous people. You're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. Welcome back to Central Standard Friday. I'm Monroe Dodd. We're looking through our Halloween season lens at the deceased notables of Kansas City. Where are a lot of them buried? With us are Bruce Matthews, who's done much to preserve Elmwood Cemetery, and Mark Lambertson, formerly of the Frontier Trail Center in Independence and a student of cemeteries near and far. If there's a famous person of Kansas City history buried in our limits that you want to, our city limits, our metropolitan area that you want to mention or you want to know about, give us a call. We'll try to figure it out at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org or tweet us. Our handle is KCURCST. And, Bruce, just before the break, we were talking about Elmwood Cemetery and Jacob Luce. Tell us a little bit about Jacob Luce and what happened with him.
Well, Jacob and all Luce are buried in a mausoleum right when you first come in the cemetery gate. And we think of Jacob Luce for the 88-acre park that Ella donated to the city in his honor, but it's interesting how he made his money. He and his brother Joseph founded the Luce Wiles Biscuit Company, but his nickname for his wife Ella was Sunshine. So Jacob Luce gave us the crispy cracker and the Hydrox cookie and a lot of other treats.
And Sunshine Biscuits, I guess,
yes.
Eventually.
Yes.
And there was a big factory in Kansas City, Kansas, in the Fairfax area, and that Sunshine
yes.
Biscuits.
And their home still exists, and it's beautiful. It's at 101 East Armour, and a couple named Barb and Ken Satoff own it now, and they lease it out for wedding of receptions and special events, and they've done a great job with the restoration of the interior of that home.
Mark Lambertson, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Mark, mentioning Jacob Luce, he not only has a burial, a graves at Elmwood Cemetery, well, where his remains are, but his wife, as Bruce mentioned, also gave to the city a park, and that park is rather grand, Luce Park. These are all different ways of memorializing the dead, aren't they?
Yes, indeed they are, and so that's why of you know, the many prominent businessmen in Kansas City history, Luce is certainly one of the most famous because of the name that has been attached to one of our most famous parks.
And so when a family has enough money and can spread that around, things like that, for instance, the Nelson Gallery of Art is an example, now called the Nelson Atkins. William Rockingham Nelson, we've mentioned, was buried in Mount Washington, but that really leads us to a woman who was buried in Elmwood. Bruce?
Mary Atkins. She was a school teacher, and when her husband died, he left her $250,000, which was a lot of money in those days.
Mm-hmm.
But she was kind of a recluse later in life, didn't like the public limelight, but she traveled Europe and became fascinated by the arts. And she had invested wisely, and she had over $1 million saved by the time she died, and she gave $350,000 of that as the first bequest for an art gallery in Kansas City.
And so her name is on it, as well as that of William Rockingham Nelson.
She is the Atkins.
Let's go now to Jim in Midtown. Jim, good morning, and welcome to Central Standard Friday.
Yes, fascinating story. Listen, on the Elmwood Cemetery, since it's walled in, let's put some sheep in there to keep it mowed so it works so hard to keep it mowed. But
we have a good mowing crew right now. They do it in one day.
I know at one time they it was like maybe a $50,000 budget to keep it mowed through the year. A couple of things, and I'll take my answers out the air. Could you explain about Genevieve Lowe there in Elmwood, right behind the what used to be the office? She was quite the actress. And we won't mention where the Frankenstein in Kansas City is buried because we don't want unwanted visitors there where he's buried. But he does eventually get some usually around Halloween. So, hey, peace out.
All right, Jim. Thanks very much. Genevieve Lowe?
She was at Lowell.
Lowell.
And she was a stage actress. Her husband produced silent films and everything. Her memorial is very grand. It's kind of a pergola type of structure.
Let's go now to Lee in Overland Park. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm looking at a book I've owned for quite a few years. It's called Here Lies Kansas City. And for those of the listeners who can't get out and hike around the graveyards, why, this is a alphabetical listing and biographical listing of some 80 prominent Kansas Cityans and where they are, and with gorgeous pictures of each tomb by Hal Sandy. And I know the public library would have them, certainly, because it's history of Kansas City. It came out in 1984.
Now, Wilda Sandy and her husband Hal worked on that book together.
Yes, she did the photographs, and she did the text.
Yeah, that is worth going to see in libraries around the area. I think most have it, Bruce.
They do, yeah, and primarily as a reference book, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And it goes beyond Kansas City. I remember even Chouteau, one of the early, the guy who ran the trading post here for the Chouteau brothers in St. Louis. It has his grave, which is in St. Louis.
Yes. You know, you were
Yeah, she did track down a few people who somehow didn't end up here.
Mr. Wayne. Well, thank you, Lee, for your call.
Okay. Enjoy it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You talked about other ways to memorialize some of our ancestors. If you walk into St. Paul's Episcopal Church on Main down there, there's a beautiful stained glass window to Jacob Luce. And if you go into Country Club Christian Church, there's a plaque that saying that the chimes in the bell tower and everything are a memorial to Jacob Luce. Ella liked to memorialize her husband.
Yes, I've seen the chimes, the plaque at Second Presbyterian Church that was memorialized to Jacob Luce. Yes, Ella didn't want him to be forgotten, did she? Now, we've had a couple of broadcast sorts in Kansas City over the years who have grown up here and made their fame nationally. And one of those was Jane Epstein, who with her husband Goodman, calling themselves Goodman and Jane Ace, had a radio talk show called Easy Aces for many years. Tried to take it on to TV, and it even survived there for a while. And we have an episode from it, Easy Aces, and let's hear that now.
I'll say one thing for this bank I started the checking account with.
What's that?
They sure give me good service.
They do? How?
Well, I only started writing checks yesterday morning, and already they're sending them back to me. Now I can keep them like receipts.
They're sending them back to you?
I never heard of that before, Ten. I thought banks sent out monthly statements.
Every bank I know does. What do you mean they're...
Well, here are the checks. They all came back this afternoon. Now, all I have to do is to put them away neatly, and they're just like receipts.
Wait a minute. Who sent the checks back?
The bank, I guess.
Some people are memorialized by plaques and parks, and some people will be with us forever through their radio programs recorded. That was the Easy Aces. Goodman and Jane Ace Epstein's were buried at Mount Carmel Cemetery in Raytown, Missouri. Also another famous broadcaster from this area. He was a newsman for many years, called the most trusted man in America, is out at Mount Moriah. He died not too many years ago, and his name was Walter Cronkite. And here's Walter on his final broadcast in 1981.
This is my last broadcast as the anchorman of the CBS Evening News. For me, it's a moment for which I long have planned, but which nevertheless comes with some sadness. For almost two decades, after all, we've been meeting like this in the evenings, and I'll miss that. But those who have made anything of this departure, I'm afraid, have made too much. This is but a transition, a passing of the baton.
Indeed so it was, the passing of the baton for Walter Cronkite, and there may not have been his like since. And there are quite a few famous people buried in our area. Carrie Nation is out at Belton, lying next to her mother in the cemetery there. Bruce Matthews, the man who founded the Helzberg Diamond Shop, is at Elmwood, right, Morris?
Yes. Barnett's grandfather is buried there. And Elmwood is also the oldest Jewish burial ground in Kansas City. Henry Block has about 50 of his ancestors there. There's their first rabbi, and the oldest Jewish gravestone in Kansas City is in Elmwood. Congregation B'nai Yehuda purchased 2 acres in the southwest corner when the cemetery was first opened in 1872.
And there's another Jewish cemetery not far from Elmwood, Sheffield, I believe?
Sheffield. There's about a half a dozen Jewish cemeteries in the city. Mount Carmel.
Mark Lambertson, over the centuries, our attitudes about religion and the afterlife have changed quite a bit. Has that been, is that noticeable in the cemeteries you've toured?
Yes, I would say that there was a great deal more emphasis on the afterlife and heaven and so forth in tombstones from past generations. The very early ones were much more in the form of warnings. You know, you need to, you know, live a very good life to make sure that you, you know, go to heaven rather than hell and so forth. There would be images and various other things inscribed on tombstones as warnings to people. Later on, it became a little bit more hopeful with images of angels or cherubs and poetry or prose that would talk about the golden gates and the streets of heaven and being welcomed by family members and so forth. So that has slowly tapered off through the years, and some of it may be related to the fact that it got to be more and more expensive to have some additional inscriptions or carvings done. But actually, in more recent years, with the use of laser cutting for granite and so forth, it's become more popular to add inscriptions and pictures and a variety of things to more recent stones. But I don't see the same degree of religious sentiment placed on tombstones as there was, say, 100 or 200 years ago.
Yes, some cemeteries you can now see people's photographs on tombstones.
Exactly, yes. Or their cattle brand, if they were a rancher, or something else representing a hobby or a favorite pet or love for nature and flowers. Yes, it's become sort of what I call sort of the second renaissance of great tombstone art in recent years, simply because of the new technology of being able to much more easily and affordably have images carved into a stone as hard as granite.
You're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. I'm Monroe Dodd, here with Bruce Matthews and Mark Lamerson. And if you have a comment or a question about the burial grounds of Kansas City, give us a call. Join our conversation at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Bruce?
Taking advantage of the new technology, when Ella was killed, Wayside Waifs cremated her and returned her ashes to the cemetery. And a few weeks ago, we had a public memorial service for her, and Frisbee Monuments in Independence donated a wonderful new black granite memorial for her, and they etched into the stone a photograph I had taken of Ella with her little pooch who wandered into the cemetery last fall, and they became good friends. So Ella's right there memorialized.
And to our listeners who may not have been listening earlier, Ella was a deer that was a habitué of Elmwood Cemetery on the east side of town. Let's go now to the phones, and let's go to Larry in Kansas City. Good morning, Larry.
Whoops. .org and get stories under the stone.
Okay, well, that didn't quite work out with Larry there. Sorry, folks, but my apologies. We have a new phone system here that can sometimes make some difficult for the technologically challenged like myself. We mentioned Satchel Paige earlier. He's out at Forest Hill Cemetery. And we talked about Charlie Parker, who's at Highland. The famous jazz band leader Benny Moten played in Kansas City, spent a lot of his time here, died here, and he's at Lincoln Cemetery, which is at Blue Summit in the unincorporated area, I-435 and Truman Road. We can go to a caller now, I believe, if I can make the phones. All right. We're going to take a second longer. I'm going to make absolutely sure, folks, before I try this telephone system again. Bruce Matthews, let's see what else you have. You mentioned the Armors. You mentioned the coaches at Elmwood. We mentioned Mary McAfee Atkins and Jacob Luce. August Meyer, who was the captain of the parks program in Kansas City, is also at this park.
Yeah, he was the first president of the park board, and he made his money in mining and actually laid out and founded the town of Leadville, Colorado.
Hmm.
But we know him here for Meyer Boulevard, Meyer Fountain, Meyer Circle Fountain and everything. And so he played a great role in the development of Kansas City.
Led the parks apartment. Now, if I can make this thing work, we will go to Dave in Overland Park. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. Interesting show. I was wanting to make one or a couple comments. Number one was there's a small cemetery about 135th and Metcalf, and you can just barely see it. And in the back, there are a number of so-called unknown graves. It just says unknown, and there's, I don't know, 20 or 30. And I just wondered if anybody knew, are those military people, or are they just plain folks that are not identified? And the other comment I was going to make is we go to Paris every once in a while, and the cemeteries there are very interesting. Some of them, the graves like Oscar Wilde and Jim Morrison, people are there every day looking at those and so on. So that's my comment.
Thanks, Dave. Does anybody know Mark or Bruce about that cemetery out there at 135th and Metcalf?
I'm not familiar with it.
I'm not either, but having it out that far, it would have been a small rural cemetery,
yeah,
obviously, for most of the years. And in those locations, it tends to be local farmers that would have been buried there and probably people of not much in the way of financial means. And so many, many times there would be burials and no monument ever placed over the grave afterwards. So I'm sure it was probably in individual family members of some of the farming folk south of Kansas City that are buried there in unmarked graves.
You know, one of the most unique locations for a burial is for Charles Lindbergh. His is at the end of the road to Hana on the island of Maui. And Yeah, yeah. You have to make all those turns and everything to get to his gravesite.
But he has a great,
he's buried,
a great view from there, right?
Yeah.
It's probably the most famous remote grave that I've ever, most difficult to get to that I've ever visited. I've been there a couple of times, actually.
The caller mentioned, Mark, the grave of Jim Morrison and Oscar Wilde in Paris. What is it about cemeteries in Paris that makes them special?
Well, that particular cemetery, the Montparnasse Cemetery in Paris, has all the wealthy elite of Parisian society of the last couple of hundred years, I guess. And they had beautiful, beautiful, beautiful monuments. Some of the most impressive monuments I've ever seen in my travels all around the world are in that cemetery. And so there are graves of famous people, but it is one of the most amazing outdoor, open-air, I guess you could say, art museums that I've ever visited, because the sculptures and the statuary and everything is really imaginative and very, very creative. And it just happens that there are, you know, famous people buried there as well. Gertrude Stein is in that cemetery, and Maria Callas is in a crypt there, and various other people that have international fame.
Marcy from South Kansas City has emailed wanting to mention an excellent website as a resource, and we used it before the show. It's www.findagrave.com, where you can punch in locations for states and counties and cities and people and find out a lot of information. And I think it's still a work in progress. Mark Lamerson, you've contributed to Find a Grave?
Yes. I and other members of my family, we're all sort of, it's a free kind of membership where we have profiles, and it's a wonderful resource in which there are millions of tombstones that have been photographed and placed on that website. It's being added to every single day. You can actually put in a request if you know of a grave of a friend or a family member in another state. You can put in a request, and a local volunteer such as myself would go out to the cemetery, find the stone, if there is one, and photograph it and post it on the website. It can provide a lot of hours of interesting pleasure simply by looking up all the famous people that are listed in Find a Grave. And it's also done, you can look up individuals by their career field or what they're famous for, whether it's a baseball player or a political leader or something in the arts. You can look them up by location, by surname. It's a wonderful resource, and I use it frequently. Another organization I would mention is the Association for Gravestone Studies, which is probably the premier organization in the United States pertaining to the care and preservation of cemeteries and tombstones as well.
That's great, Mark Lamerson. Interesting things about www.findagrave.com. Let's go now to Kaler in Kansas City. Good morning, Kaler.
Good morning. Hey, a quick thing. The new Santa Fe Cemetery, it's actually from, of course, the trail rides from the Santa Fe Trail. Are you familiar with that cemetery?
Well, there's a cemetery. This is on the site of the town of New Santa Fe down at State Line, and what is it, 150th or so?
About
119th, okay.
19th, yeah.
There's a cemetery there now.
So you park on the south side, and you walk through it and see the history of there. Okay. But the grave marker that's on the far north side of all of them is a small one that just says, the horse thief.
The horse thief. Enough said.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Kaler. That could be the name of a movie sometime, The Horse Thief, or if it hasn't already been done.
Monroe, before the show ends, I want to take the opportunity to thank you. You were one of the co-authors in our book about Elmwood Cemetery and wrote about the journalists who were buried there.
That's right.
It was a real community effort. It's a great book. All the proceeds go to Elmwood Cemetery. Adele Hall wrote the foreword to the book. Crosby Kemper wrote about the politicians. Barnett Hillsburg wrote about the merchants. And it's all people like that who gave their talent and their time to help us remember our roots and our ancestors in Kansas City.
And you're talking about the book that you oversaw the production of and took the photographs for. Once again, the name, and where can you buy it?
Elmwood Cemetery, Stories of Kansas City. Second book I recently did was in conjunction with some other co-authors. Mamie Hughes was one of the co-authors, and Andrew Kaplan and Christopher Leach, The Kansas City Spirit, Stories of Service Above Self. Currently working on a book on stained glass windows in Kansas, photographing them in churches and homes and schools, and going to tell the stories behind some of these masterpieces and works of art in Kansas City.
Once again, all symbols of the way we remember people who've passed on. So it's whether there are ghosts or no ghosts, whether apparitions walk the earth at this time of year or not, there are so many ways to remember people, from the recordings of radio stars and TV announcers to stained glass windows to chimes and the thing and so forth. Mark Lamberson was with us this morning from his home in Colorado. He was formerly of the National Frontier Trail Center, and he's a student of graveyards here and around the world. Mark Lamberson, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the invitation.
And Bruce Matthews, one of the primary leaders of the effort to preserve Elmwood Cemetery and interest in cemeteries around Kansas City, was right here in the studio with us. Bruce, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You can listen to this program again, subscribe to our podcast, or listen to any of our previous programs on the Central Standard page of KCUR.org. Central Standard will be back Monday with a conversation with John McDonald of Boulevard Brewing Company. Up to Date is next with a look at some of the worst musical gigs, 90 Mile View, and a weekend to-do list. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with Ross Steinmetz. I'm Monroe Dodd. This is KCUR, and enjoy your weekend.